Om Namah Shivaya. Dear listeners of Shaivam.org, the next program is Spiritual Discourse. In this, you are about to listen Kawai Hindu Lectures. The titles are Antar Mandir, which means Inner Temple, and then Kawai Adinam's Vibration, presented by Sri Shivaya Bodhinatha Velayatha Swami. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.
Starting today with our Master Course lesson. Sutra 3, 4, 5. Nurturing new monastics. Siva's monastics look upon newcomers to the monasteries as their potential spiritual heirs to care for, tenderly nurture, and train. They know it is their duty to pass on the wisdom of their years. Om Namah Shivaya. So focusing on passing on the wisdom of their years, this is a concept that not only applies to monastics, but to anyone who's in the Vanaprastha Ashrama, age 48 to 72. Hinduism has the four ashramas, which help understand one's respective duties during the first 24, we're the student. During the second 24, we're busy living life. And in the third 24, we have enough wisdom from having studied and having lived life to pass something on to some others. So, age 48 to 72 in the Grihastha Dharma is the same idea that's talked about here in the older monks passing on their wisdom to the younger ones. So Gurudeva spoke about that on a number of occasions and stressed that it's everything you know. That's what he said in his own fiery way. It's your duty to pass on everything you know to the younger monks. That's what he'd say. So he'd say, whoa, what do I know? So what he meant was both your outer skills as well as your philosophical knowledge, your understanding of the devotional tradition, everything. All the knowledge you've acquired about mundane things as well as realizing the self, the whole gamut. It's your duty to pass on all of that to the younger monks. He would even be more forceful. He'd say, otherwise you're accruing bad karma. Just to make sure we got the point. So, the idea being that it's a duty. It helps life advance when we take the time to pass on our wisdom, what we've learned about life in the first 48 years of life. When we take time to pass that on to those who are younger than us, it's a duty that we have at that point in life to pass that on. Recently, we've had a number of wonderful pilgrims come from the mainland, and we've met with some of them, and the common experiences, they're very inspired about being at the Adinam. They really feel and appreciate the high vibration of the temple. And a group that was here recently said, oh, the monks are so helpful. The monk in the Minimela was so helpful, and Mahadevan was so helpful in taking us around on the tour. And it's just such a wonderful experience here. So in Gurudeva's tradition, when someone praises you, you pass on the praise to someone else, right? So we said, whoa, we're so fortunate that Gurudeva trained us for 30-some years, and he trained us well, and that's why you're experiencing what you do. And we're very fortunate to have all that training from Gurudeva. And, of course, the point I didn't make is that what they experience also depends upon the strictness of the monks in upholding their disciplines. In other words, one of our disciplines is the 24-hour-a-day vigil. which we've maintained for some 29 years. Is that right? 29 years? So 29 years of 24 hours a day vigil. My goodness, that's a lot of vigil. So imagine if that was going on in your home. If in your home for 29 years, round the clock for 24 hours a day, someone had been performing religious actions, always awake. What kind of vibration would that create in your home? You'd probably move out. The vibration was so high, you wouldn't be able to sleep, right? Wouldn't be able to eat. You'd turn your home into a temple. Well, fortunately, we have a separate room here for this, so we can still eat and sleep in other rooms. But it definitely has that one strict discipline, 24-hour-a-day temple, has helped create. You know, it's a major factor in creating the strength of the vibration of Kaudable Temple after only 29 years. It's a very powerful temple, and of course, it's founded on Gurudeva's vision, which gives it a unique ability to manifest a profound vibration. But just because it's founded on that doesn't manifest it. It gives it the potential to manifest it. But the actual disciplines of upholding the temple are what help the vibration manifest sooner. Otherwise, it would take longer to manifest. You'd eventually have the same vibration, but it might take 200 years to get to the same vibration if you were just doing an ordinary temple schedule from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. or something. You might be where we are in 29 years after 200 years. So it expedites the whole experience. One of the beautiful writings in the Saivite Shastras talks about the devas, the guardian devas, who protect the vibration of the monastery. And part of the chant, part of the Sri Rudram chant, the second half, the chamakas, is attracting devas. We are attracting devas for this, devas for that, and so forth. The whole second part of the chant keeps bringing different devas to us. So the presence of the devas is also very important in the vibration being high. And therefore, when people, pilgrims, sincere pilgrims come, they experience a very high vibration. So devas are like the equivalent of, when you live in our neighborhood, you can't help but think of the dogs. Lots of houses have dogs, so what happens? You walk by the house, and what happens? The dog starts barking, right? Well, he's a guardian deva of a certain kind, physical one. He has a job, and he knows what his job is to keep you out of the yard, right? You don't belong in that yard. That's not your house. So you're not supposed to go there. If you get near there, he starts barking very loudly. Does his job. You keep walking by, you get out of sight, and he stops. Did his duty, earned his meal, chased you away, kept you out. Well, that's the same idea as a guardian deva in the inner worlds. They keep people out. In this case, they're keeping people out who are in the same world they are, in the second world. They're keeping beings out, lower beings, asuras, out of the vibration of the monastery. So it's not automatic, though. The strength, their ability to do that can be diminished if the monastery isn't strict. So, for example, we've noticed sometimes when we have lots of heavy equipment coming in and out for different purposes, guardian devas aren't able to keep out certain beings. And so usually what happens is an animal will die. One of our animals will die because they've absorbed that negative force. That's one of the reasons we keep animals, is they protect us from negative forces. Not that we want them to die, but it prevents it from doing something worse, from upsetting all the people in the monastery and causing a problem. So just heavy equipment coming and going excessively can lower the strength of our force field and therefore our vibration. So it shows how sensitive the vibration is. So it's one of the reasons that Gurudeva initiated Sarupaksha, the three times a year when we close down to guests in the monastery proper. And one of the reasons for that is it strengthens the force field, gives the guardian devas more power in protecting us from negative forces. So it's like three times a year we're pumping up our force field, like you would pump up a tire that's slightly deflated. You know, it's just a little bit flat, so you pump it up, get it fully functioning. So that's one of the reasons we observe the Sarupaksha period, is it strengthens our force field, which helps keep our vibration high during other times of the year. Other factors which can cause the vibration to drop are if monks don't do their sadhana. Get up in the morning and instead of meditating, we just kind of hang out and talk story. That would bring down the vibration. It's the constant sadhana, the constant practice of each monk lifting their energies above the instinctive and intellectual natures into the superconscious nature on a daily basis. By doing sadhana on a daily basis, the lifting of energies through our external devotional practices and our internal meditative practices, that lifting of energies by all of us on a daily basis is needed to keep the vibration high. Otherwise, the vibration would go down and we'd start attracting every hippie in Honolulu. That's a joke. We've gone through cycles like that. We start ending up with some interesting characters from Honolulu show up and you start to wonder, uh-oh. But usually it only lasts for a couple of days. If it's lasting for a few weeks, you could start to worry. You say, uh-oh, someone's not doing their sadhana. We'll take a survey and see who it is. So those are just some thoughts there on how we can maintain our wonderful vibration by following the guidelines Gurudeva gave us, being strict with our sadhanas, and therefore all the sincere pilgrims have such a wonderful time. They want to tell all their friends to come and experience this beautiful Hindu monastery in Hawaii that's such a religious place. Working on a article here, this is the first draft of it. In India, you can't help but think about the Ayodhya situation where Hindus are wanting to build a temple in Ayodhya no matter what. If it causes violence or not, it doesn't matter. It's important to build this temple. So I've been thinking about that and calling it Sri Ram Mandir in this talk. So in addition to the Ayodhya Sri Ram Mandir, there's another temple that we need to think about, and that temple is close to everyone on the planet. So how can that be? How can one temple be close to everyone on the planet? Because some people live here and some people live there. It must be far from someone and near to others, right? No. This temple is the same distance from every person on the planet because it's their inner temple, the temple inside of us. So we're calling that the Antar Mandir, the inner temple. So a number of years ago when I was in Chennai and had been meditating in a temple there, a young man came up to me, been watching me meditate, you know, sitting there for half an hour or something, came up to me, he'd just gone around to all the shrines and had darshan, and he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Oh, I'm meditating." He says, "Oh, well, what's meditating?" And I said, there's a temple inside of us. And we can experience God and the gods inside of us in our inner temple. But he wasn't convinced. He said, "That doesn't make any sense." But it's true. Definitely there's an inner temple. And you've heard me tell this story before, but it shows the importance of the inner in our tradition. And it's the Yogaswami story about the Tamil conference, remember that one? Utsavam Tamil. There was a Tamil conference in Colombo during Yogaswami's lifetime, and international conference. I mean, this was very exciting here, coming to Sri Lanka, not in India, but this is in Sri Lanka. We have a conference on the Tamil language taking place in Colombo. So everyone in Jaffna was very excited, and there were signs all over the place for the Tamil conference, or Utsavam Tamil. So Yogaswami, in his own way, took advantage of the situation, and he promoted his own conference, which he called Utsavam Tamil, or the inside you festival. So he was stressing that what's going on inside is more important than what's going on outside of us. It's the inner reality when it comes to spiritual life that we need to think about, not the outer show, but our inner life. What's really going on inside of us is the important thing. So what is our inner temple? Inner temple, of course, is our soul, or more precisely, our soul body, Anandamaya Kosha, Karana Sarira, two words for the soul body, our body of light, which is what reincarnates from life to life. So it's the real us. One point of view, it's not our inner temple, it's us. But because we identify with the external, it looks like it's inside. If we identified with it, that would be a more correct perception. But we're looking at it from the outside today, so we'll say, okay, inside of us is this body of light, and inside of that, we can experience God. So that's our inner temple. So outer temples, of course, are very important, and building them is a good thing, maintaining them is a good thing, but if in building or maintaining an outer temple, we get into disagreements, harsh words, or even worse, violent actions, that's creating a barrier to experiencing the inner temple. So clearly, the greatness of building an outer temple is not achieved if we do it in the wrong way. If harsh words, disagreements, arguments, or violent actions are involved, is definitely doing it in the wrong way. It's preventing us from experiencing the inner temple. The purpose of having an outer temple and worshiping there is to help us eventually experience the inner temple, right? It's not supposed to make it harder to experience the inner temple. That's counter the whole idea of temples. So Gurudeva had a very mystical perspective on this when it came to the Iravan temple. We've all heard him say it on many occasions that talking about the foundation, said the foundation of the Iravan temple will come up when my closest devotees purify themselves enough through sadhana and tapas. Remember that statement? Everyone was asking, well, when will the foundation get built? When will it get built? You know, looking at it in an external way, which of course is natural. And Gurudeva is looking at it from the deepest mystical point of view. He's saying, well, that won't happen outside of us until something happens inside of us. This temple is a special temple, just not an ordinary temple. It can only manifest when my closest devotees have further purified themselves. Through Mahavasana Daha Tantra was very important at that time. Everyone was going through that process. So when enough of Gurudeva's closest monastic and grahastha devotees further purified themselves, lo and behold, foundation got built. It took a long time. So did doing Mahavasana Daha Tantra. But you can see the difference here. Gurudeva is looking at it that, oh, we want to build a temple on the outside. Well, what do? Well, we purify ourselves on the inside first. When we become sufficiently purified, sufficiently closer to our inner temple, the outer temple will manifest. So a very profound look. So when it comes to the inner temple, the Antar Mandir, to some people, it's at quite a distance. It's like a temple on top of one of the Himalayas that requires a long pilgrimage. That's how far the inner temple seems from the person. Even though it's just right inside, it seems that far away. To other people, it's very close. It's as close as, say, the nose is to the eye. That's pretty close. Is that close? Well, what makes the difference? Why is it close to one person and far away from another? Because it's the same distance, in one sense, from everybody. Because of what's in the subconscious mind. How much impurity is in the subconscious mind? How much we haven't cleaned up the reactions, the residue of past adharmic actions. It's adharmic actions, inappropriate actions, which cloud the subconscious mind. So if someone has a very heavy subconscious mind, the inner temple is not accessible. It's like it's as remote as a temple on top of the Himalayas. It's just something they'll never get around to getting to. It's too far away. If someone has done a lot of sadhana and tapas and purified their subconscious mind and is living a dharmic life, then it feels very close because you can go inside. There's nothing in the subconscious mind preventing you from going through the subconscious mind into the superconscious, into the soul nature. There's nothing there. You've cleaned it up. So it feels very close. But if you haven't done sadhana and tapas and your subconscious mind is still cloudy and you're still doing adharmic actions, even if it's in the name of building a temple, you're still being violent, you're still speaking hurtful words, you're getting into arguments, you're actually moving further away from your inner temple. You're going at a distance from it. This is obviously counterproductive. So, the idea is that we should always remember the inner temple and any activities involving outer temples, building them, maintaining them. We need to remember the existence of the inner temple, the Antar Mandir, that is our soul, and that it's the most important temple. And all our activities in outer temples eventually bring us into the inner temple. And that it's in the inner temple that we have the ultimate darshan, a much deeper, a much more profound experience of God and the gods, and our oneness with God, that is the goal of all worship in outer temples. So that's what we call Antar Mandir Jai. Slogan, Antar Mandir Jai. We can all go around chanting Antar Mandir Jai. They're going around chanting Sri Ram Mandir Jai in India, so we're developing our own slogan to counter that. So that's just in its preliminary stages, but wonderful thought there that inner and outer temples need, the inner and the outer temple need to be looked at as a whole. And all our activity in the outer temple needs to lead us into the inner temple eventually. And then we really are benefiting in the way we're supposed to. The main activity for the mission members that we had was a satsang on Tamil New Year's Day, Saturday. And we introduced the study for the Ritual. Can give one to Tandu, one to Deva. This is a little flyer which lists in a summary form the 9 qualities to cultivate in children. So we sent this out already as a in our satellite news as an enclosed file, the full text. So this is like a summary sheet. Stick on the refrigerator or whatever. The reminder. So somehow we managed to give an hour and a half talk introducing this. I still don't know quite how, but get fired up. So I'm not going to do that this morning. But I do have something interesting. Timing is always so interesting, the way email relates to life. And so, having in mind that I would mention this, you know, this morning, the nine qualities, and of course the key quality, the core quality is number one, the positive self-concept. You know, having a good self-image of oneself, because without that, lots of the other qualities aren't even possible to develop. So that's like the core quality. So my email said this came in at 2 this morning. So it's a really nice statement. This is someone who is just about to become a member writing to a member. To be frank with you, I never thought of becoming a member of the Sai Vasudhana Church, for I always thought that I was not prepared and good enough to be a close shishya of Gurudeva. I considered myself too inferior and not having the skills that were needed. Sound relevant? I mean, this is a living example of the problem of a low self-esteem. So, doesn't even feel worthy enough to become a member. And such a low self-concept. It took time. I had to go through a lot of storms in my life, problems and problems that most young men should encounter. What I have appreciated is that I've come to know the two sides of life very well, the sane and the insane. The experiences give you lessons, and the lessons make you realize and strong. Today, I keep on repeating that these problems were just blessings to mold me and make me better, happier and stronger. Yes, I am a happy person today. Some time back, I was not a happy man. Doubt was the main reason that prevented me from coming close to Gurudeva. I was doubtful. What lies ahead? What will happen if I get married tomorrow? How will my wife respond? I prayed to Ganesh and gave him my trust, hope, and love. He responded by putting obstacles in my life. I hit them one after the other. They were painful and hurt me. Finally, they rechanneled my life in the right course. This is how I feel today, the 17th of April, 2002. I love my life and myself. More obstacles are to come, I know, and maybe more storms. Now I know that I will be more prepared and secure, for I have taken refuge in the global spiritual family of our beloved Gurudeva. Isn't that amazing? I mean, could you ask for a better testimony? It's like, you know, I had sent out a memo to the world and said, please send in your testimony so I can read this on April 17th for introducing this subject on self-esteem. So, So it shows the whole pattern, you know, being a young adult with this problem, which is how he started, and his father was very abusive, really, gave him a terrible time. Becoming very despondent, going through lots of problems, but coming out of it, thanks to Gurudeva and Gurudeva's teachings and the support of the members there, came out of it and started looking at it in a wise way. And at this point, if he hits more obstacles, he's just going to smile and say, oh, thank you, Ganesha. I must be going in the wrong direction. So, very, very appropriate. So otherwise, we visited the Concord Temple. It's been a long time since we were there, and got a very nice reception. There's a Shivacharya there, Ananda, who's the nephew of Sukumar, who was the first priest to stay here for 6 months and train us in Shiva Puja. So he already knows about us and really respects Gurudeva and wants to visit the Adinam on his, one of his trips to India, wants to stop by here. And really a wonderful person, gave a fantastic puja. And so they were really went out of their way to honor us, and so we had a little parade down the street there, down Second Street for a few yards, big banner and everything, and went inside and did a nice deepastapana to a picture of Gurudeva, and then they garlanded us and put a lot of shawls on. And, we gave a talk, which was on Taka, I guess it's yesterday's Taka, and just a general talk about Lord Muruga and about Gurudeva and Gurudeva's interest in starting temples in the U.S. and how we did that through starting the worship and gifting the Ganesha. So then they read a little plaque that they're putting on the wall to Gurudeva, very nice, which honored him as the founder of Sai Sanana Church, Amayan Academy, and Palani Swami Temple, and for transferring the management of that temple to them, and for his advancement of Hinduism and Saivism worldwide. That's roughly what it says. Very appropriate. And so we were there for the Abhishekam and went through a second round of shawls and garlands and some nice prasadam afterwards, and then we went through a third round of shawls and garlands. So we came back like with 20 different shawls. The whole room was filled with wall-to-wall garlands there. So they went, I'd say they even overdid the attention and respect in a very nice way, and took photographs and invited the, mentioned to me it'd be wonderful to have all the members coming back and mixing with the other members, meaning the ones who are still part of the temple, like Ravi Nadesan, who looked like a giant when I saw him. I forgot how tall he was. He's a really tall person. He was so happy to see us. And then they're starting a fundraising drive to make a new entrance, which is straight out from the sanctum. So you'd be entering on Second Street, right, straight into the deity, which is traditional, of course. So they showed us some drawings, and we blessed them. And then at the end, we gave $101 for their building fund to do it, and that touched them. That's always what Gurudeva does, you know, starts the building fund in a generous way, which always surprises people because they expect him to be collecting money for his project rather than giving money to theirs. So, but it is a tradition that Gurudeva often did, so we're trying to fulfill everything that Gurudeva used to do. So we gave them the $101, and they were surprised and happy. And so they said, oh, well, we can raise money for your temple. Is that all right? I said, well, we wouldn't want to interfere with your efforts. And they said, well, no problem. We'll just take it to our board and see what happens. So we'll see. See what happens on that side. I dropped the magic numbers, some conversation, 40,000. That's one of my standard phrases. Oh, it takes $40,000 a month to keep it going. Here I'm on construction. And mouths drop open. They're not used to having to raise that much each month just to keep your building fund going. You know, not your operating fund, but your building fund. So that impressed them. So all in all, there was a very friendly feeling, and the members have already asked some of them, you know, well, can we start going there again, or this or that? So we'll be discussing that and giving them some guidelines as to what's appropriate. Otherwise, we had an evening darshan session from four to seven each evening. So we saw lots of the members and some students as well. Like Greg Holland came from the East Coast just to see us, and Yatrika came up from Hollywood. And so some of them hadn't come over for the Prayopavesa, so it was the first time they'd seen us in a while. So that worked out very well. We were at the Embassy Suite, so that's a perfect place to have darshan in the room. They have a nice front room there, and big place for people to sit.